All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and welcome back to the HITECH Annual Report Work Group. We are joined today with one of our co-chairs, Carolyn Peterson. The other co-chair, Aaron Mary, will be joining us shortly. And we also have Brett Oliver with us today. So let's get started and jump right in, and I'll turn it over to Carolyn to kick us off.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's amazing how fast the time has flown, but here we are again to do some more refinement on our list of topics and kind of thinking about filling out the gaps and opportunities and maybe looking at some potential recommendations. We had previously looked a lot at what had come from previous years because the work of the Public Health Data Systems Task Force was still in flight. We now have their final recommendations, and that work has been wrapped up, so we can start looking at how to incorporate that into the planning for the annual report for 2021. With that, I'll just pass the mic to Brett for his thoughts.
Now I'm ready to get started. Let's do it.
Sounds good. And I know that some of us have some software that is updating against our will, which means if you hear slight pauses in speech, don't worry. We're just dealing with technology. So what I see on the agenda, we will be diving into the draft crosswalk here momentarily. Or maybe you have, and I can't see that because my application is updating. But
so is there anything from the slides that you wanted to cover first, any meeting information?
That's a good thought. I can't see any of that. So we should have a slide that has our schedule. We have monthly meetings being set up through the rest of the year. There you go. So today is the July 22nd meeting, and then we will have August 20, a date to be determined in September, October, November, and December. And then in the early part of next year, Brett and Aaron will bring our product forward to the Fall HITECH for approval. And I will be out of the work at that point because my term with the HITECH ends this year. So a little background information. If you want to go to the next slide. And this is our schedule in terms of engaging with the HITECH. Right now we are scheduled for meetings in September, November, and then January and February. And I don't know if we will be meeting presenting as well at the October meeting that was just added to the HITECH schedule. Is that something we should expect, Michelle or Mike? Or do we know yet?
I know we are planning a HITECH meeting on October 13th, and this is mostly dedicated to the TUCA RCE, who's going to be seeking the HITECH's assistance on the Common Agreement in QTF. But if there's a short update, I think we could insert that in the October 13th meeting if one is needed. So, but I know that the majority of the time will be spent on TUFCA. So you'll have to let me know if you would like to have a short presentation at the October 13th HITECH meeting, which, by the way, we haven't submitted the Federal Register notice yet, but I know the HITECH members did receive the calendar hold for that meeting so that you can prepare for that as far as your scheduling.
Okay, that sounds good. That's a few months away, so it's hard to predict where we'll be, but just in terms of setting expectations and helping everyone stay on the same page in terms of planning and work execution. Could have the next slide, please. So today we're going to continue to develop the draft and look at some potential recommended activities to suggest to the HITECH, along with the gaps and opportunities. And next slide, please. So I think this is the part where we bring over the draft crosswalk. Is that right, Michelle?
That is correct.
Okay. I'm still flying blind here with the updates, so maybe Brett can start.
You're doing remarkably well.
I did review the slides earlier today, so I have a very basic idea of what they say.
Well, you could have pulled me. That was nice. But I'd be glad to help if I can.
Thanks. I should stay on audio. I think it'll just be the computer rebooting itself. But go ahead.
It looks like the first area of the landscape analysis are the public health data systems and infrastructure. We have an update to the proposed recommendation there. Michelle, I can't see that quite. Proposed recommendation for high-tech activity was that the USCDI task force would define a core standard set of data elements to support patient matching across healthcare and public health data systems, including demographics. Seems pretty straightforward. Any comment there, Carolyn?
I don't think so.
The only comment we added in there was that there is also patient matching in another category below. So just something, you don't have to resolve anything now. I just wanted to point that out, that we have a couple areas that are starting to show up in both public health and in like interoperability. So there's a decision along the way for each one of where does the primary chunk of text land in the report. Is it going to be a public health topic, or is it going to be more an interoperability that mentions public health? And you don't have to decide that now, but that's one patient matching particular. Workforce was showing up a little bit in other places too, but within the same target area at the moment. So that's not a decision yet. But this one, patient matching, keeps popping up in more than one place.
Does it make sense to potentially add that as a topic under interoperability instead of having it multiple places? Or Carolyn, you probably already reviewed this better than I have.
Right. It's already in patient matching. Patient matching is already in interoperability. Like there was already discussion this year, but it's broadened that topic and put it kind of back where it was in previous years. So that's why it's already happening there.
Gotcha. Did your screen go super wide on that? I can see five slides, but I can't see any detail on it. Maybe that's me. There we go. Under the second one, under the public health data systems incentives, under the proposed recommendations, we learned that ONC believes that funding-related activity is not in scope for high-tech under authority of the CURES Act. So we have no recommended high-tech activity, correct?
Not yet.
Okay.
Right, and there's some talk about one, but then more discussion showed that it might not be in scope. We need to think of other ones.
Sure.
And this would be a tricky area to talk about incentives without talking about funding. It was just that the Cures Act doesn't really provide for the high tech to kind of go down that road in any depth. So you kind of can mention it here and there, but not kind of cross that line too much. So it's... you guys tried, but the pushback was that it probably went too far. So.
Okay. I guess we've got similar discussion under the funding silos, public health data systems funding silos.
Right. And that one, I think you could broaden how you describe it. Rather than saying funding silos, there are true silos of data there. So you can focus more on the data piece and not really have an activity around funding. So it's not so much that I can't talk about funding, it's more like to pursue it in depth in a task force, just kind of out of scope. But you can still describe it that way in the landscape itself, but maybe focus more on the data impact.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Michelle, that maybe the high-tech concern is more of the siloing of the data, but you can't separate that necessarily from funding, even if we're not addressing the funding specifically. Does that make sense to you, Carolyn?
Sorry, yes.
So we've got down under proposed recommended high-tech activity. High-tech could partner
with NCVHS to identify barriers to and potential opportunities for public health use of HIEs where available and affordable. If we're not stock funding, do we remove affordable? Do we just say we're available? Or is that still in our purview?
Yeah, I think the description is fine. It's sort of
okay.
Deciding how to fund it and asking the government to fund it a certain way was problematic. Previous one.
We can't do appropriations, basically, but
yeah, right.
We can talk about what should be funded.
Right.
Okay.
With the public health data systems team.
Yes, it's you're right. It's the what rather than the how that's important here.
Sounds good. Anything else there, Carol?
I don't think so.
I have a question on the previous one, because I kind of was the one that jumped you down to the third one. So the one that's truly about incentives, are there other kinds of incentives besides just pure funding incentives, or another way to describe what it was you were thinking about initially? Carolyn was the one that kind of added some of these in between meetings based on the Public Health Data Systems Task Force report. So there is interest in kind of aligning with that, but there might be more thought and discussion needed around this second one and whether we even keep it in this crosswalk if it's too complicated. Chances. And Kelly can also, you know, the report better than me, obviously, as a co-author. Do you think this topic's covered sufficiently in that other report? Like, is there something more that this work group and then the high tech needs to say on this topic?
Incentive is close, and funding silos both get us to the funding issues, which are challenging. I think there are, you could probably say more about infrastructure, you could say more about situational awareness data. I didn't attempt to delve too much into things like case reporting and lab reporting, because those are largely technical issues, you know, where that are quite limited in terms of the high tech offering recommendations. I mean, that's what the task force was there to do. You could potentially say more about equity. I did align something in this crosswalk. I didn't really try to pull that out in multiple ways, but we could certainly do that. And then, of course, reaffirming that not just individuals need access to pandemic type information and public health information as it relates to their own personal health information, but also that the healthcare ecosystem, hospitals, providers, clinics, various types of specialty facilities, including long-term care, need to be able to access that public health information. And what is it that help that HITECH could do to help advance that?
Carolyn, in your thinking, does standardization of these public health data systems, you know, like having certain, I won't say requirements, but it seems like a lot of these public health data systems have sort of evolved on their own, independent of what's available and what's out there in the commercial world. And there's not been an incentive to check with who's going to be delivering the data and what data they can deliver and what data they want to receive back. Is this a place for that, or is that something sort of different than what you were thinking? Incentive being, hey, I want to be able to take Baptist Health data and I want to be able to give it back, but we don't have those kind of conversations. There's no incentive for them to reach out and say, can you do this? Would you like to receive that, until there's a specific use case and then you find out there's disparate systems?
Right. And part of that is a function of, you know, much of public health being localized, in the sense that different areas have different concerns and different needs that are more or less critical for that area. It also has to do with state laws and there being different regulations about, for example, what is done with immunization data, what has to be reported and to whom and who can access it. Part of the incentivizing discussions at the public health data systems meetings had to do with giving public health agencies money to be able to do a lot of this in the way that meaningful use and another program, PI, created incentives for the healthcare side to do the work and to get the systems in place. So it's kind of a dual technical and regulatory, as well as, you know, funding all of that. I would be interested in hearing Aaron's perspective as well, because he kind of sits in the middle of the practice, but also understands, you know, the technical side and a lot about what it would take to make things happen, maybe in a way that I would not. Let's see if we can scroll down a bit. So here, clinical information, you know, public health, of course, wants to be able to get more information from providers as well, so it can better understand the effects of what it's doing and what its upcoming needs are, and hopefully better reporting that is more useful for planning at higher levels as well as locally. So here, thinking about what are the barriers that are regulatory related, what can be shared, are there restrictions on different things? There's also some aspects about reporting about minors, for example, immunizations and health conditions, and in some states there are laws about which parents can see that, or what is the guardian?
Hey y'all, it's Aaron.
You know, I'm sure you probably encountered some of those issues.
Oh yeah.
It looks like Aaron's joining.
Yep, I'm here, guys. Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon, sir.
So we're muddling through the public health data systems opportunities and challenges, and looking at proposed recommendations and trying to figure out how to get around the notion that we can't say how to fund things, but we can talk about what needs funding and how do we get that in a way that's meaningful and helpful and relevant to what the high tech actually can do, as opposed
sure.
to what people might want.
I like
John,
that.
Did you go back to anything that you already covered to get his input?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything. Carolyn, let me know if there's anything that was contentious. I doubt there were, since we've pre-briefed on a lot of things.
No, I mean, I think there is real concern on the task force about getting adequate funding and funding that is in parallel in scope to what healthcare and the healthcare ecosystem gets. A sense that, you know, public health needs to be truly funded. It can't be an afterthought if we want it to be able to add all these capabilities that it doesn't have now.
Yeah, no question. No question. I don't know what the right verbiage there is, but I agree with you in concept. I'm just.
The transmittal of the public health data systems recommendations was completed today.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be made public, that document, the final draft, and we can use that to try to build out some of this. I won't say I did what I consider to be a complete and thorough job the other night, just because I knew that we needed to get some feedback to ONC so they could finalize the documents and put them on the website, you know, and meet all of the administrative requirements to have this meeting. But certainly I think there's more that can be done with that work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that idea of just pointing to that letter as a start. It's just a starting point.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What are the topics on here?
We're still in the public health target area.
Okay. Okay. Do we want to talk about HIPAA minimum necessary, or what do we think?
So, Aaron, when you join, you are all talking about the electronic lab reporting, electronic case reporting line item,
mm-hmm.
which I think we were at. So one of the goals today was to try to fill in any blank cells on here. So you guys have talked before through the opportunities, but need to think about recommended activities. So is there anything on that line before we jump down to the minimum necessary question?
Okay. Thank you. That's what I needed to know is where we were starting. Okay. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
All right. So opportunity here, expand adoption, et cetera, et cetera. From an ECR perspective, one of the things that I was very impressed with was the speed at which the CDC was, they have an ECR tool. And I know, Brett, you and I both looked at how we connect our respective health systems to that tool for easier access. It would be something to talk to them. So I know they were making more improvements to that, and they had a whole roadmap related to ECR and some of the work they were doing with the states. That I know several high-tech members were involved with. Maybe we should, one of the proposed recommended activities would be just to have CDC representatives give us an update and kind of tell us, how things are going and where the bugaboos are.
I think it's a good idea, and I'd like them to include sort of a landscape analysis of their own about just what's the percentage of, let's just say, health departments that can, state health departments that can connect by ECR.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's this assumption that you can, and then you do all this work. That's been our experience. Follow CDC guidelines only to find out our state can't support it. What the heck? It would be nice to understand where that landscape is. It might uncover some gaps that the high tech's not aware of.
Okay. Other recommendations, Carolyn?
Coming off mute. We can. There will be some discussion about capabilities at NCVHS, and perhaps a proposed recommendation is to engage with them and see if there are collaborations that would help to advance ELR and ECR.
I like that. That's good.
We've talked about wanting to do more with that group.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great start. Let's start there. And we can add to it. But let's kind of find out what's going on with the landscape. So much has changed there in advance. I'm sure that we're just not aware of.
They're having a hearing in late August. A day-long hearing, we may be able to get some additional information from that.
Right.
Or we can just ask HITECH members. Certainly everyone who is engaged with those systems was not on the PHDS.
Okay. Those are good starts. That at least gets the ball rolling on that cell. Do we move to the next line?
Sure.
All right. So information exchange to facilitate care and monitoring of patients with long COVID. A lot of this has come down to issues with registries. We're setting up our own long COVID registry because there's not some defined national registries. I think there's a few now that are out there that are being publicized by, Brett, correct me if I'm wrong, like Duke and a few others have started some national ones. But, I would say it would be helpful to have a centralized long COVID data registry. So we could look across the entire provenance of what's happening with comorbidities and others, particularly as Delta and Lambda now pick up speed here and velocity across the country. So maybe proposing a centralized national registry if one doesn't exist.
Yeah, I like that. I'm not sure, because when I read improved clinical documentation standards for patients with long COVID, I think of provider documentation, and that's a much more abstract and grandiose opportunity than if we're
yeah.
talking clinical documentation in terms of a registry.
What about?
But I think even before the registry, you're going to have to define it well and get an agreed definition, and I'm not sure that exists.
Sorry, Brett. I mean, it could be broader than registries. It could be something like EPROs. Because my understanding, at least, is that the definition is still evolving. We're still understanding what is involved in long COVID. It may be that part of what we need to do is be collecting patient perspective on that and understanding what the lived experience is.
Yeah, that's true.
I know the CDC and ARC are doing a lot of work around this. I wonder if it's valuable just to ask them, like, for an update. Like, what are you guys hearing? What are you seeing? What do you, you know, particularly CDC, what are you guys concerned about? And so that way we kind of know the dimensionality here of what's going on. Because as we all looked up, there is an ICD-10 code that references mm-hmm. long COVID. What does that actually mean, right? So,
and there are citizen science-based research projects. One that's gotten a lot of airplay is at UCSF, where they've built out an app, and people who have it are just reporting, and that's all being gathered.
Yeah, that makes more sense to me to identify the clinical issues that we're trying to solve with IT rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So again, that whole seek first to understand, to your point, of focusing on the clinical components of what's missing there, because there could be an issue that we can't identify long COVID, I'm making this up, because there's a lack of a unique patient identifier, right? Like there could be other upstream things that we really could focus on that is part of the high tech purview that we could, that would assist this issue.
Yeah, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Do we move on to the next line?
Yeah.
All right. So this is the HIPAA one. And remind me again why this is in blue. Is this because we just want to review what we wrote?
Correct. It's new text since our last meeting on June
yeah.
22nd. Right.
Yep. Got it. Thank you. All right. Public health data systems need improvements. More clinical information needs to be shared with public health authorities. Yep. Opportunity, publish best practices and guidance for applying the HIPAA minimum necessary standard to information sharing along with public health authorities. And then what we could do, high tech could be in a listening session to better understand the barriers to applying the HIPAA minimum necessary standard to information sharing with public health authorities. You know, are there patient advocacy groups who could also like include in this thing and hear from like direct patients? Like, I've been reading so much literature, and I've even seen legislators recently on television saying, well, you know, vaccination status is part of HIPAA. You're not allowed to ask anybody anything. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. So there's definitely a misnomer, and I'm curious what patients think. You know, like, is this clear to you? Is it, and what is it, why is it not clear? So I don't know if there's a patient advocacy group or something like that we could include in this listening session, but that would be helpful to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I can't think of any times when we've had any significant patient voice listening at all in the high tech and as long as it's existed, really.
Yeah.
We've occasionally had one person. I know that the hearing that was used to kick off the ICAD stuff, the patient perspective was represented by a physician, was not a patient. We have not really done so much of that, although certainly there are people on the high tech who do bring that perspective.
Of course, and it may be that, but at least just to get a focus of the patient perspective, because this we're running into a issue of misunderstanding of what HIPAA is versus the reality of it, right? And I wonder if that's contributing, and I bet it's contributing to the fear, right, of either getting vaccinated or sharing that you've been vaccinated. So how do you, because I don't believe people are malicious or have misintent. I believe that it's truly just misunderstanding, and you got to seek first to understand. And so to me, I think having the patient voice is critical to say, like, what's up here? Like, do you understand what HIPAA is? and why is this fearful?
Yeah.
Okay. Other than that, the text looks great to me. All right.
I do have a question for you all on this one, because it's new language. One thing that came up in our last report and probably will come up again is bidirectionality. So looking at sharing with public health authorities, I was thinking, who's the other party that's sharing with them, and is it bidirectional? There's a lot of, like, assumptions under this language that maybe we need to clarify. Would you agree with that? And if so, would you alter this text?
You're talking about the under the challenge, or are you talking about the opportunity?
Well, it's in two places, under the opportunity and the activity. It says sharing with public health authorities. That implies another party sharing with them, or more than one party. So should we define who those are? And is it bidirectional? Is it just people pushing data out, or is it going both ways?
I guess I read sharing with, meaning if I share something with you, it's a, but it, maybe we need to be specific about bidirectionality. I expect to get something back if we're sharing, but.
Maybe I'm being more basic than that. I just want people to share. I mean, it's great to be bidirectional, but in some cases, people don't want to do anything, like nothing. So I mean, maybe I'm even more basic than that. I just want to overcome the fear barrier, which is the whole point here. Not that bidirectional isn't bad, and we can strive for that, and we should strive for that. There are parts of the country that just refuse, flat out refuse, and those are most at risk.
And sharing, do you mean patients sharing, or providers, or both, or others?
All the above. All the above.
Okay.
I mean, this goes back to the conversation we had during the high tech, right, about the issue of bidirectional or striving for bidirectional. I mean, that's great. But in this case, we're seeking first to understand why. What are the barriers? We don't want to use technology to solve the issue of lack of interest in sharing anything. Carolyn, thoughts?
It sounds like you're comfortable with the phrasing as is, what I'm hearing.
I am.
It already covers your concerns. Okay.
Yeah, I am.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yep, nope. I'm just curious. Carolyn, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the question about bidirectionality was something that also came up in the deliberations at the PHDS at one point, in the sense of an individual saying, if you truly want to achieve health equity and make significant gains, you can't strive to create something that is so expensive and so far-reaching that it takes down the whole system. You know, you will lose, the cost will force you to do other things that maybe are not what you really want to do. I mean, initially we were, Janet and I, the co-chairs, were given the guidance that we should think broadly and we should not put ideas about, you know, what would cost too much or what would be too hard around what was brought forth. The notion was to think as broadly as possible, thinking about ideal states and not try to get into the weeds about what was feasible. But clearly there are some on the high tech who have some concerns with that approach. I feel like where this language sits right now is probably a good place to start, in that the high tech will be reviewing some of this and giving us input before the draft of the report is finalized, and that will give us, you know, a chance to adjust if we need to.
I think it's fair. That's a fair point. Okay. Well, then we can be prepared for a spirited discussion around that. Hopefully not, but maybe. Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So I think we need to leave the language as is, your preference is to leave it as is for now and then adjust as needed later. It'll get broadened in the report itself and described in more depth. So I'll just sort of make a note to myself to make sure that we do that in drafts. But I think you answered my underlying question. Thank you.
Good deal. All right. So what's the next section here? Could we go up, please, so I can see it? All right. See, the workforce one, is that where we're next? All right. All right. So recommended activities. Improve public health workforce resources. I mean, part of this goes back to, availability of funding, making sure that folks realize how many buckets of money sit out there today. I mean, I was just with a group of CIOs last week, and I was like, guys, have you looked at the ONC website and applied? Like, there's $80 million there to help train the next generation epidemiologist or whatever. Most people don't realize it. So how do we get word out to folks, you know, in partnership? It'd be great to have like a one-stop shop of like, you know, these are all the funding opportunities available. I don't know, you know, so I mean, I would like to know what all is out there. I'm sure there's tons of buckets of money for this. And then go ahead.
I was just going to say I didn't try to draft a recommendation or a proposed recommendation because I knew that that announcement had just come out, and I figured we can get some ideas by looking at that announcement. You know, rather than we didn't in the task force, we did not get into the workforce development piece very much. I think there's some about it in the funding and in the policy, but it gets close to the area that we're trying to stay away from. So maybe at the program announcement for the funding, that might be the best place to go to get some proposed recommendations.
Mm-hmm. And as well as, you know, what have we learned? Are folks submitting? I'm making this up. Are they submitting incorrectly for the funding, right? Because there's certain ways you got to go about applying for funding. Maybe it's educational in the process. Maybe it's too difficult to create a more, you know, work to create a more streamlined version or FAQ document how to do it. I'm just making this up. You know, and Michelle, since that's, you know, in the house per se, it's the ONC. I wonder if there's an individual or plural that help manage those requests to just give us education. What are you seeing? What are the bugaboos that are inhibiting folks applying, if any? Okay. So I think our recommended activity is look at the data already from the announcement of public availability of funding and lessons learned from that to inform other recommended activities. Sound good?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right, let's go on to the next section then. All right, patient matching. Woohoo! All right. In the blue there. Let's see. So patient matching needs to be shared or needs to be improved, obviously, for data sharing. In blue, the high-tech USCDI could define a core standard data set of data elements to support patient matching across healthcare and public health data systems, including demographic information. Also see public health data systems infrastructure topic in the public health target area above. Yeah, I mean, could. Brett and Carolyn, correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't this already been done? Aren't there like defined data standards out there? I mean, I know it's not part of USCDI, but like I've seen a ton of literature about this. Like, you know, if you correlate these 19 elements, like you get like a 98% accuracy rate or something like that, including the USA project or USAT and other things.
Yeah, that's definitely out there for sure. I don't know if there's one accepted standard.
This is based on a recommendation in the public health data systems report. It may be that we should go, maybe that we need some fine tuning from Stephen Lane, or perhaps to look at what's in the PHDS recommendations and make this tighter or more specific in some way.
Mm-hmm. I'm good with that. I mean, I get the logic here, and that's where it came from, was from Stephen. He's right. And you get the pretty good fidelity. It's not 100%, but it's much better than what we have today. And I would also say the other thing here would be, you know, get an update from, I think it's, isn't it Carmen that's running the USA project, the ONC, right? And what are the lessons learned there with having the fidelity of a a standardized street address, US street address, right? Does that also help? So are there things we can do to help push that project along? Okay. So the text looks good, Michelle. Just maybe add a blur about the U.S. I always say this wrong. USA or USAT, whatever, project.
Right. I think either is
okay. Got it. All right. Next line. Health equity. Yes, big problem. All right. Collection of health equity data elements related to race, ethnicity, disability, condition. Yes, that's exactly right. More industry standards supporting the collection of health equity data elements could be agreed upon, yes. And the high-tech convenient listing session identified barriers and opportunities related to standards for consistent collection of health equity data elements related to race. It's not just race, it's related to any social determinant, right? I mean, like, to race, gender, there's comma, comma, comma. There's so many different things. So I think it's worth listening and continue to gather data elements. And it could be even a component of the US CDI task force to take that up.
Aaron, that might be my error because Carolyn sent me text that I may have misinterpreted in a rush. It may actually be that whole list that's in the challenge section.
Yep.
Yeah.
That would make sense to me.
Try to spread that out across the columns, but I think I put that EG in the wrong spot.
That's taken directly from the recommendation.
Okay. Is there a phrase, though, we'd use to summarize all that? Because to say all those categories every time we want to mention health equity is kind of a problem. So that's the problem I was trying to solve, that maybe your report does do that.
That's a good question.
It was wordsmithed once in the PhDS doc, and then it was just copied everywhere that it needed to go. So it is kind of everywhere.
Oh, okay.
I know that's not helpful. But it's not like there's a proper name for that. It's like we were just as broad as we could be, and this is what it shook out to.
Okay, so the fix I propose for the activity is take out related to race at the end and just say health equity data elements. And then in the challenge, I need to take out the EG and just let that list be a list.
I suggest looking at the PhDS and seeing how it's framed out. Because you have a better idea of how to structure this document than I do.
Okay.
And I think when you look at it, it'll be intuitive. Maybe in a way that it wasn't quite for me.
So, Aaron, did you have other thoughts about the activity?
No, I think you guys said no. Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure we were just not limiting ourselves to race. So, yeah, whatever the right vernacular is, I'm not a wordsmith, but whatever the right vernacular is, I'm supportive as long as we're inclusive. Okay, next one, the algorithm bias one. So in blue here, the challenge decision-making should be more equitable. Yes, opportunity to screen healthcare and public health data systems for bias and algorithms. Yes, and the high-tech convene a listing session to identify sources of algorithm bias in healthcare and public health so data systems as well as potential solutions. Absolutely.
That comes from the PhDS recommendations, and there was not a lot of discussion about dealing with bias and what you need to do to address it, although it was retained that activities need to be undertaken to find it and get rid of it and prevent it. That could be a recommendation that HITECH does something in that area.
Mm-hmm. Makes a little sense. Brett, any comments on that?
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, it's only been within the last year that I realized where so much of the data for some
a lot of these companies' algorithms come from Silicon Valley and the East Coast, and the rest of the country there's no data from. So I'm sitting here trying to think, I suppose that recommendation is broad enough to say, you know, does ONC come up with, you know, some kind of standard before you can roll out an algorithm for that entire country that, you know, you include a certain percentage of people from all over or certain demographic areas, and but I think that's probably included in that proposed activity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, then let's go on to the next line. Interoperability standard, close loop referrals, lack of cross organization, lack of standardized systems make for close loop referrals, explore opportunities to advance standards that can improve systems for close loop referrals and prior auth. I mean, I haven't heard about it recently, but if you guys remember when we had last year, there was that whole prior auth discussion that came to HITECH, or maybe it was the year before. I think we were all in person, actually, yeah. I recall. And like there was a huge effort going on prior auth. I haven't heard anything, but quite honestly, we've been consumed with COVID. Maybe should we get an update on like how is it going, CMS and others and payers? How is it going? You know, I think I would like to know an update.
Yeah, that sounds fine to me.
Yeah, I think listening session, Michelle, listening session to get an update on prior authorization and efforts around that. From that same group of folks that Dr. Rucker had invited to that one meeting when we were all in person.
That may not include that closed loop referral piece is, I see that a little differently, and it's a big deal. If you go outside of your system, you have no way to electronically close that referral and know that it's not still hanging out there. The patient followed through, the patient had the test done. In a lot of instances, and so it's a manual, at least for us, it's a manual activity.
I could have sworn that was the original intent, though, of the ADT, the CMS ADT mandate, like was to begin getting there.
Well, but that's, you know, you're going to have a lot of ambulatory stuff there, and that's not mandatory.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. No, that's fair. That's a fair point. So we could include, you know, in that listing section of getting an update, is this on the radar, yes or no?
Yeah.
And if so, what's going on there? Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Okay. Okay. Should we go to our next fun topic here, information blocking?
Oh, that's...
What is that?
Michelle, why is it in red? When you put something in red, what does that mean?
The red text was text that came from the work group itself at the 22nd meeting.
Thank you. Okay.
With the exception of a couple edits that we made this week, I had to find a way to show that we had changed wording. So if it's a one word here and there, it just means within the last week or so, the work group changed it. But mostly it is things from the June 22nd meeting.
Got it. All right. So the gap. Info blocking interferes with seamless and secure access, exchange, and use of electronic health information. Challenge, no common framework for measuring compliance with new info blocking requirements have been proposed or implemented. How will the industry know that information blocking is being addressed and reduced? The publication of the ONC Cures Act final rule sets how the information blocking requirements are being implemented in practice. So, I mean, I know we're doing this, right? Like, we basically release everything immediately, unless there is a issue with patient safety, right, per the rule, in which case it can be a temporary hold, just giving the doctor a chance to describe some, you know, critical lab value with you as a patient, so you don't misinterpret, you know, your own results. I mean, there's some pretty standard stuff that folks are starting to measure, I think, in terms of did you release the full note? Did you do these things in a relative time? So, but isn't that what that group, that was the last discussion in the HITECH last week, the ONC folks are leading, convening that team to look at this stuff?
In part.
Brett, as a provider, like, what matters to you as a doctor? That your patients are
informed,
or like?
Yeah, you know, it's been a relative non-event for most everything, as you would have anticipated, particularly with notes. What I have, and for me in my organization, the pathology reports so far have not been an issue. In fact, it's been better accepted than we had thought. I will say that I was having a meeting with some other CMIOs across the state, and there have been two organizations that have had a suicide with after a pathology report was released before the provider could talk to them. Now, that's number one, it's anecdotal. Number two, would they have done it anyway, even if it was the doctor delivering the information? I don't know, but that's been the fear, and I'm wondering if anybody is collecting data like that other than just anecdotal stories. I know both organizations I talk with are looking to the state to legislate something that would supersede the Cures Act, but I'm not sure that would hold up in court either. So we're doing what you mentioned, Aaron, releasing everything as quickly as possible. But I will say there, I could see some pushback on the pathology reports forming because of those fears that we had, and now some reality to that just a few months in.
Mm-hmm. So maybe this is another listening session, kind of like a how's it going world, and inviting various groups in to just give updates.
Yeah.
I'd love to. The AMA, the AHA, others, like, just give us the take of what you're hearing from all these members so we understand where are the bugaboos. Like, we don't hear enough of, and I'm really curious about, like, the little, the little F2HC out there in the middle of nowhere, or, the rural community clinic that's still on paper. How is it going? Because they don't have the resources of a UT Austin or a Baptist Kentucky, like they just don't. So how do they accommodate this?
Yeah, it would be interesting to hear. Would be some challenges in figuring out who to invite. You'd probably have more who would like to talk than could be managed in a typical format, but that's not relevant to whether we make it a recommendation or not.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's a lot of strong opinions on both sides of this, but it would be interesting. And again, it's another one where if there's a good patient advocacy person or group to have them there, like, how's it going for you all? Like, do patients feel like this actually helped them? I can tell you that we've had numerous patients that are informed, and I actually appreciate this, that ask for it, that challenge, that want to know. We've had patients, wait for our physicians saying, now I want a full copy of every prior, no problem, there you go. I mean, so like people know, patients know. I don't think it's widely known, but they definitely are informed. So let's hear, how's it going?
Yeah, that would be cool.
All right. So another listening session, Michelle.
Captured that.
Cool. All right. Next section. Public opinion about impact of use of health IT on consumers. The gap, does public health opinion already exist that encapsulates user and consumer opinions about certain health information technologies, e.g. contact tracing or ransomware malware attacks? Public opinion about the impact of use of health IT on consumers. Okay. The challenge is, I mean, quite honestly, the marketplace is quickly, developing, and new technologies are out there that are not really addressed in existing law. I mean, that's the bottom line. And we want innovation, right? But I know, Brett, you've made this point many times, just because you can use artificial intelligence, if you don't know the algorithm behind it to get the answer, you're not going to trust it as a doc, right, a clinician. Right. So, I mean, there's just challenges of a rapidly evolving technology, especially consumer marketplace, with a lagging healthcare regulatory environment, and the two aren't sitting cleanly over each other. I've made this case for many years now. I mean, look at genomic sequencing, right? So much of that falls in this gray area where then people sell your data. They're not subject to HIPAA, but I am as a covered entity.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge. The opportunity here, though, is to realign the industry to accelerate velocity forward and clarify where existing law does play nicely, because there's also the issue of people not understanding where HIPAA applies and where it doesn't, or privacy laws, or, you know, GDPR and all these other pieces.
So thinking through, those are all interesting and important functions, but what is the activity for high tech that would address that, other than the fact that many people on the high tech would like to see that change?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, yeah, it was interesting. We had two high techs ago, we had the FTC present, right? And even they stated that there were certain things that, maybe it was longer than that ago, where there were certain components where they couldn't regulate unless it was deceptive trade practices, things like that. Yeah, I just wondered, does the industry realize that it's not like these agencies aren't doing anything. They're working their tailbone off, but they're just limited in what their scope is. And so is there a potential here to learn more about, like, and really document what are those gaps in plain English to present to the powers that be, and high tech could come up with recommendations that would assist, you know, assuming authority was granted to the FTC, I'm making this up completely, what could they go do, right? How could we help? How could ONC intersect as they investigate for information blocking and they come up against other things? There could be opportunities here. It's just putting the hospital systems in a bad place, because you do have APIs on the horizon and these deadlines that are due next year. They're going to put hospitals in the untenable situation of now, you know, you as a patient are asking for your data to be sent to this app, which is in this foreign country we know is harvesting your data and for nefarious reasons, but yet you want it there, therefore you can ask for it, and we have to do that. It just leads to a lot of liability, and without clear air cover, it's going to bring a lot of issues around. So I think from a proposed recommended activity is get sort of a lay of the land assessment from FTC, OCR, and others of where there are gaps in plain English. Maybe at the hearing, we convene a hearing and talk to the powers that be so we can understand where those gaps are, again, on paper, so we can cleanly see that.
Okay.
Brett, what do you think?
Yeah, no, you make a good point. And they're not going to come after the app that's in a foreign country. They're going to come after your health system.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I agree with your proposed recommendation.
All right. Next section then. Safety and impact of mobile health applications. So I think what we're supposed to focus on is what's in red there under the opportunity, and then recommendation. So opportunity here, two of them. One, support initiatives that review and rank the validity and safety of mobile health apps. So support awareness and education of patients regarding digital therapeutics, leveraging alerts and patient portals. Okay. And then proposed recommended activity. This is another one where, I mean, it kind of goes with the previous one. How do you educate folks, right? I mean, and there was a ton of work that ONC has been doing, great work on the patient side over the years. You know, is this a chance to re-dig into that and see what's available there and republicize it?
Or reframe it, you know, given the changes in
sure.
the
yeah.
world since all of that was done.
I think that's a fair point, right? And all the things that have happened over the past 18, 24 months, I mean, there was some just amazing work that was done by the ONC. Great guides and patient guides and awareness and all kinds of stuff. So I would say proposed recommendativity is look at that and, you know, where could we refresh it? And then, you know, just get sort of an update on what kind of advocacy is occurring on the patient side to go to the patient community.
Yeah, what other organizations could ONC partnership to get the information in the grassroots level?
Right.
A patient can understand that when I prescribe a digital therapeutic, that's different than them picking up a step app from what's been validated.
Mm-hmm.
No, I like that.
All right. Carolyn, you good with that?
Yep.
All right. Next item here, increased health equity across populations, locations, situations, accessibility of health IT. Actually, I like it like that. I like it. That's a good way of saying it. All right. Gaps. The pandemic highlighted the ongoing digital divide, access to health IT, purpose of testing, vaccine appointment. Yes, it did. Challenges. Barriers exist for the delivery of relevant public health-related information through APIs, patient portals, mobile devices, and other digital distribution channels. Opportunity here, ensure that such information is available for patients and consumers in the same ways they will access other relevant protected health information, facilitate the largest impact and reach. Guide that could explore barriers of delivery of relevance through APIs, patient portals, mobile device, and other digital distribution channels identify opportunities. Yes, I mean, I feel like we've talked about this 100 times or more, even at the big high tech. It's just a lack of appreciation for the importance of some of this stuff related to public health.
Yep.
Indeed.
All right. Yeah, I'm good with this. Language looks good. All right. Michelle, is that you good with that one?
Yes.
All right. Next section. All right, just last one then, to robotics.
Robotics.
So just one bit of information for all of you. It was sent out late yesterday, so you might not have looked at it yet. But our contractor did do some background research on this and like three other topics, I believe, that at an earlier June meeting you all had asked for more information. But I believe robotics was one of those. So there are two paragraphs in that document with a few sources that give an update on the current status of robotics.
Mm-hmm.
For healthcare and health IT.
I feel like
I would just pull out a couple of highlights from that. They talked about that robotics are useful for rule-based repetitive tasks that require attention to detail, and gave examples of where that's happening in the industry. And it talks about sort of the growth of the industry. It's still low adoption, but it's growing.
And I can tell you firsthand that, again, I was meeting with a group of peers last week, and the topic of drone delivery and sterilization using robotics of rooms using UV light is something a lot of health systems are looking at. And apparently the cost point has come down. The reliability is now there that health systems are seriously considering it and working with the FAA and others. I know like Novant is doing this in, I think it's North Carolina, pretty successfully.
Yep.
So This is definitely an area that's fast emerging. So, you know, boots on the ground, that makes a lot of sense, particularly given, you know, isolation and contact and all the things that are going on right now because of COVID. I guess for me, just in general, the gap exists that I'm not, those are the use cases I'm familiar with. But I'm sure there's others. You know, I don't know, Michelle, if we could at a future meeting kind of synthesize some of that knowledge that's been found into, you know, just the facts of, this is what the common things are. These are the common issues. It looks like there's regulatory gaps and there's, you know, other issues. Like what if someone shoots down the drone, if it flies over your yard, now what, right? Those kinds of things. I don't know if it's possible to synthesize that so we can actually talk about this with some meat on the bone.
Right. I agree that this is a step behind some of the other things. So we just got this research in and out to you this week. And partly we were waiting, Aaron, until you were back, and it would get lost in your massive inbox.
Yep.
So we have a little delay, I admit, on this piece. I agree.
That's no problem.
Yeah,
it's
the
just
next
one.
Iteration, well, yep. We'll flush it out some more.
Okay. So then I would say let's table this one just for the next meeting, and we can go through it. It's just one item. But I think it is important because it's definitely hot on the horizon. As I was saying, lots of folks are looking at this stuff.
And I like the use case idea for this because I think it is broad and kind of amorphous right now. So if you're seeing health IT use cases, that would help this group kind of, you know, be able to push forward on those pieces.
Yeah, so drone delivery, sterilization. Robots have been used for a while for medication delivery. I know a lot of hospitals do that. Before way back in the day, and Brett will remember this, it was always having the computer on wheels that had a medication drawer until we needed to worry about wastage and medication vanishing. So then that stopped and it went to the Omnicell distribution, but now it's back to how do you have runners that are robots that run up refills throughout the day to various like med-surg or other units. So yeah, the robotics is definitely something there. On top of, I think folks even in surgical settings say that like a Da Vinci is robotic, which it is. It's just not autonomous. So I guess there's going to be the autonomous and non-autonomous, semi-autonomous robots and use cases commonly found in healthcare and the gaps. So I would start there, Michelle.
Yes, that's very helpful. Thank you. A few buzzwords to go search on.
Yeah. And I have some
A lot
research
of folks that
that
use.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Brett.
No, I was just going to say, you're right, Aaron. There's a lot of pharmacy use internal. I mean, the drone delivery is cutting edge. I mean, even Novant's doing very limited stuff with that. They had a special sort of COVID relief to deliver supplies back and forth between their facilities. But that's sort of the retail delivery of medication by drone. There's really only one company doing it. UPS is doing it some, but Zipline is the. My point is that that's still kind of cutting edge. It'd be great to stay ahead of it, not wait till it was a problem and out there. I agree with
Yeah,
that.
Zipline. That's the company I'm thinking about. Yeah, Zipline. They're the ones that seem to be everybody's looking at because they have a commercial grade like bulletproof drone that's like can hold up to 5 pounds or something awesome. So I mean, there's a
It's
lot
them,
of them.
actually. Yeah, they're.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're deep in talking with them. That's why I know a few more
Oh yeah,
people.
no. You're exactly right. You and several other people, and it's neat.
Good stuff.
All right. Is there any other sections on here? Or is that it?
I think that's it.
Awesome.
Pretty much. Were there other areas or things that you wanted us to cover today, Michelle?
No, everything that's in your crosswalk is the focus for now. And then you have another meeting in August, and we've just scheduled September and October as well. So we'll keep working on the crosswalk.
Awesome. Well, good work. Nice.
Yeah.
Coming along.
Yeah. And we're giving you back 17 minutes. Well, no, we have public comment, so I guess maybe 12.
That's right. Probably go over with the public comment, yeah.
Are you ready to go to public comment?
Yeah, let's do it.
I am, yeah.
Okay, great. Operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Sure. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for questions. There are no comments at this time.
Okay, thank you. Carolyn, Aaron?
Go ahead.
No, just very excited. We got it all done today. We're on schedule and on track, and that's great news.
It is. All right. Well, then just take some time back and get some water, and then onward we go.
All right.
Hey, great.
Thanks.
All right, bye, y'all.
Right.
Be safe.
You too.
Take care.